Okay. You don't need those on, Martin. You're grand. Take them off. Yeah, okay. It's more comfortable. Don't ruin your hair. One of us has hair. We want to maintain your good looks. Okay, Martin McFadden is an addiction counsellor and joins us in the programme. Martin, thanks very much for coming up for a chat.
No problem at all, Greg. It's great to see you, man.
Yeah. What is the role of an addiction counsellor? Obviously, it's talking with people with an addiction. Are people referred to you?
Yeah, I mean, addiction would probably be my speciality, but I'm a general therapist as well. I work with everything around mental health, but I'm probably best known for my work with addiction. Yeah, people would be referred through GPs, family resource centres, people like that, you know. So I'm open to referrals coming in from anywhere.
Have you seen any changes over the years in terms of what people are addicted to, how addicted they are?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of, obviously when you're in the kind of area, I've followed the evolution, if you like, of drugs, particularly over the last kind of 10 years. And there have been significant changes in terms of there's been increased usage. There's more options and more ways. There's more distractions. There's more things to become addicted to. You know, I've kind of been making the point that social media hasn't really helped that either. It's actually enhanced that, because everything has become so much more available and so much more normalised online. Mm-hmm. I was even talking to a young person last night, you know, in terms of the cocaine issue, which is just completely off the charts at the minute. And what they said to me was, but sure, everyone is doing it. And that kind of really summed it up for me. It was almost a kind of a general acceptance now, mm-hmm. right across the board, but also a kind of... like not even taking responsibility for that, you mm-hmm. know, people don't not even realizing the potential harm. Not even.
Well, when I was growing up, the situation with drugs was this: A, it was so frowned upon.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I don't recall it really being glamorized in the media as much as it is, whereby, you know, leaders of cartels are almost anti-heroes.
Yes.
That type of stuff.
Yes.
So it was really, really bad. B, I wouldn't have had a clue where to get hold of it, you know, because you would have been in a pub or a club. You'd probably have to have known someone who mm-hmm. was dealing it, or actually just go up and approach someone and say, hey, do you have any drugs?
Yeah.
So those are the two things that jump to mind. Now, drugs is, and it could be anything from what's happening with the Kinahan cartel,
sure.
Their involvement in, you know, reputation washing in sports and what have mm-hmm. you. It could be programs like Narcos, you know, whereby, you know, major drug dealers at the top end of the snake are seen as kind of anti-heroes, as I mentioned. But also to the fact that on Snapchat particularly and other social media, you can very, very easily get drugs and it's not really seen as a bad thing. Is that part of the problem? Is that part of why drugs are so prevalent? Because I think a lot of people listening probably don't get how many young people and older people are getting and using drugs.
Yeah, it's a massive part. You know, when you consider the amount of time that all of us, myself included, but particularly probably our younger generation spend time-wise online, and when you consider these platforms, the Instagrams and the Snapchats and the TikToks in particular, who, you know, will tell us that they are doing everything they possibly can to stop the sale and distribution, you know, like those are the hubs where young people spend their time. And when you have drugs like cocaine or any of the drugs really, you know, being glamorized and being on offer, I mean, like dealers have become so adept at this that they'll even send you menus by WhatsApp as to what you need to buy and price wise and quality and everything like that. So it's really, really come on leaps and bounds. Again, from anecdotal evidence as well, talking to people who deal, some of their dealers now don't accept cash. They want you to play with Revolut or whatever other card. So we really have moved on from that sort of mystical character that you
talked
about.
They're a well-organised business.
Absolutely.
That will look after their customers to
Absolutely.
Make sure they come back.
And it's a business. And, you know, one of the things that has kind of caused this upsurge, I mean, actual production and supply of cocaine doubled from the years 2013 onwards for about 4 years. So it's not just an Irish thing, it's a global thing, it's worldwide. And as I said, the criminal gangs have become more adept.
And they've got their distribution networks. I mean, absolutely. Now and again, the guards will nab someone coming into the Northwest. Maybe they work in Dublin, yeah, whatever it might be. Yeah. But the drugs are, they have their network to get, yeah, them to get them distributed.
But it, and you know what, the Gardaí are nabbing is just really the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. You know, so you know, it's really, really difficult at the moment.
What about cost? Is cost not a barrier to taking drugs? You know, young people, you know, maybe they have a weekend job, and it's not just young people. And we spoke so positively about young people on the program yesterday, and I don't want this to be a pylon on young people, and neither do you, Martin. But we as adults and have a responsibility to make sure the small group of them, although big in number, are helped. But but what about the cost side of it? Is cocaine use not an expensive?
It is an expensive drug, you know, particularly when you consider that the actual hit you get from cocaine is short lasting. So, you know, I mean, the effects of a line of cocaine can wear off well within an hour. So again, if you're like me, you'd be looking for another hit fairly quickly after that. So if you're doing a few lines of coke per night, then it's costly. And I suppose,
do we know how much?
Well, you're talking about up to 100 euro a gram kind of thing. It varies.
So how many lines might you get out of a gram?
You'd get a few lines, but there's people who would be
My point is if three or four people, young people, got together with low sort of resistance and they put 30 quid each in, they could probably make quite a few thin lines and have a night out.
Yeah, cheaper
than they might on booze.
Well,
I'm not trying to promote it. I'm just trying to have a full-on real conversation about what might be happening.
Well, yeah, and the argument too, Greg, and a lot of people will tell you, is it's considered a cleaner drug in terms of, like, you don't have the same level of hangover and you're not sick and you're not kind of all of that sort of stuff. And it's probably not as apparent or visible to people. So, I mean, if you're showing up to work in the morning, you're not seen to be hungover as such. So it's a cleaner alternative for people, for younger people, you know. And again, as you rightly say, you know, we're not here to demonise young people. I love young people. I love working with young people. But by the very nature of their youth, they don't always make the most informed decisions.
No, but
we do, and neither do we,
because I remember us having a conversation on this programme 3-4 years ago. I can't remember how long it was. And it was talking about cracking down on drink.
Mm.
Right, and minimum unit pricing of alcohol, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, right? Yeah. But I said at that time, I says, okay, that's grand, right? Mm. We need to do that. But what are we doing about drugs?
Yeah.
And the person, I can't remember exactly who it was, said to me, well, what do you mean? I says, well, every action has a reaction. Yeah. And the more expensive or difficult you make one addictive husband, but addictive in a different way, then you are going to drive people to alternatives.
Yes.
And we should have at that time been going, right, okay, we're not saying this is causing what we're talking about. So in other words, I'm not blaming young people.
No.
I'm blaming people that make the decisions that we set up a situation that perhaps turns people from booze to drugs.
We're on the same hymn sheet, Greg. I remember when you talked about that back then, and I thought the minimum unit price and as a standalone measure was not in any way effective. I mean, it was obviously targeted at young people and problem drinkers. But people invariably in addiction will find the money somewhere. If you're an addict, that's what you do. If you're an alcoholic, that's what you do. And something is going to suffer.
Like alcohol, is the majority of cocaine users casual users? In other words, they'll go out at the weekend, they'll take cocaine, and then they'll carry on the rest of the week not take any cocaine. And then obviously the same with alcohol. But then you'll get people that feel that they need to function with it. Is there that kind of a breakdown of usage as well?
Well, the more people you have using and the greater increase in that, the more people you are who are going to become psychologically and physically addicted. So, yeah, I mean, cocaine traditionally was kind of associated with white collar and people who would function that way. But because it's really gotten into society now, right down through every town and hamlet up and down the country, it's no longer that, it's there. So the more people that are using, I think my point is the more people who are going to become addicted and the more problems that you're going to have that comes with that. So, you know, I'm listening to you coming through the gap and listening to Jenna there as well. I mean, drug-induced psychosis, that kind of stuff, that's all coming down the track. Reading about people and news outlets about people being, you know, jailed for drugs, I mean, all that kind of thing, it's going to be commonplace. It is commonplace, you know.
You believe at this point, do you, and you can put it into your own words, that cocaine use is so wide and its availability is mm-hmm. so widespread that it's not going to be eliminated, that... particularly with the resources available to Gardaí, and we've seen the dwindling yeah. resources in the drugs unit here, that there's no point us pretending that in some way we can police drugs out of society. Is that an assessment of what you're saying?
That's fair enough. I mean, somebody was asking me the other day what was Plan B, and I said, well, we don't even have a Plan A, and we never did. You know, we've taken a very hardline judicial approach to drugs from day one, but it hasn't worked. This war on drugs that's always been talked about hasn't worked. I mean, I've been advocating for years for a health-led approach towards this because the judicial approach is not working. I mean, Simon Harris, Minister Simon Harris, stood up in the Dáil in February and talked about you and I or whoever goes out at the weekend and does a line of coke being responsible for financing the drug cartels and everyone else. And he also talked about you know, putting further Gardaí into nightclubs and pubs undercover. I mean, that boat has long since sailed.
In this day
you know?
And age, in this day and age, you could say that things have changed. Now, you could say that every pint that you buy feeds into a big, massive global drinks yeah. industry that's responsible for A, B, yeah. C or D.
Yeah.
You know, people yeah. don't trust big business. Yeah. That argument, I don't think, is going to win any support because there's a general distrust of big business and what have you.
Sure.
So I understand his sentiments, but I think he wasted his breath there.
I think, I've been advocating, you know, drugs have been around since the beginning of time, and as has drink. You know, it's a deeper societal issue. You know, we should be asking, you know, not so much about the supply, but the demand. Why are people needing to escape the way they are? Why are people getting off their head every weekend on cocaine or drink? What's that all about? That's the stuff we should be looking at and should have been looking at for a long time and try to understand that rather than to shift blame and kind of focus on that. You know, people, like I said in a recent article in the paper, good people sometimes make poor choices. It doesn't make them bad people, you know.
But you see, the message isn't clear because, you know, you have ciggies, really, really bad for you. Drink, good for you. Let's open pubs wider.
Yeah.
Drugs, really, really bad for you.
Yeah.
You know, you get where I'm coming from.
I do.
It's kind of like, you know, we cherry pick what we see as good and bad. And I want to get into the nitty gritties of, I'm actually going to ask you to put the headphones on now, Martin. We're going to get into it a little bit more about what a health care-led approach might actually sound like or feel like. But I want to say hello to Pamela on the show first. Pamela, hi, how are you? Good morning to you.
Hi, Greg. Yes, I'm very well. And I just want to put it across to everybody about drugs, that how well known they are, that the people in the street knows where they all are, but that there's nobody higher up that can go and do something about it. And there's nowhere here in Derry or beyond for any young person to go whenever it's really bad.
Very sadly,
Greg, I could name them all. I could name all the drugs because I kept them here during the COVID. I kept them here to make sure that he was clean and that he was fed and everything else. And one of the days when I would spend time in the bathroom or spend time out in the outhouse, out in the yard, I would be calling, where are you? What are you doing? And one of the days in the bathroom, he opened it. He says, I'm all right, I'm here. And he opened the door. Now, this is a boy of 39 years old, right? And I just treated him like, because he was my youngest son of 9, right? And he opened the door and all this froth was coming out of his mouth. And I said, what are you at? And he says, nothing, I'm just... And I said, what have you in your mouth? He had the tablets, denture tablets, that you clean your, you steep your teeth on. He had them in his mouth, he was eating them.
Just in search for drugs. Now, your son Stephen, very sadly, you lost him a year ago to drugs.
And 6 weeks before that, Greg, I lost my firstborn grandson, John.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
To drugs as well. John was in a house and found dead, and Stephen was in a house found dead whenever he, and it was in totally two different parts of the city.
And you're quick to point out too that, you know, people, when we talk about this, they just go, "Oh, it's their own fault," or "They're a scumbag," or whatever it might be. And yeah, you don't think
right.
that
that's
tells
what I
the
said
full
to Charlie.
Story.
I said, you know, they'll say, "Don't you be run about with him? You know, that's scumbags." Mm. They're not scumbags. None of those young people are scumbags, Greg. They're all well brought up children, and the mammies can't take them by the hand and say, you know, "Come on, you're not going with him, and you're not going there, and you're not going there." You know, how do we know? How do we know that people are not saying, "Don't you be running around with Stephen? You know, he's a scumbag."
Yeah, I catch
you. None of them are scumbags. They're wee critters that are caught up, and nobody to bother about them. Do you know it's one of Stephen's? I could name them all day, Greg. That one of them, the fentanyl one, was a patch, which whenever I phoned the doctor a few times and I was told, "It's an adult, I can't talk to you."
Yeah.
And I said, "But I'm his voice." I said, "Because there's nobody else going to be a voice for him." And he was getting the fentanyl patches, bringing them home here to my house, cutting them into four with a pair of scissors, and eating a quarter of them as the day went on through the day. He ate them. He didn't put them on his arm.
And his drugs journey started with smoking. And it just escalated from there. Is that correct?
What did you say there, Greg?
No problem. I think there's a radio on in the background, which might be a slight distraction. Stephen started smoking. He started smoking cannabis initially, did he?
He started off with cannabis, right? And then, of course, he didn't like cigarettes, and he didn't like drink. But I used to say he didn't like drink because it interfered with the drugs.
Yeah.
You know. You didn't have the money for the two, so you got the drugs instead. Greg, do you know what he used to go over the border in a taxi? And he used to pick up a package from a post office over the border where they were ordered online, the blues and the yellows.
Wow.
And he brought them in here one day and swung it open. He didn't take his time to open it right. Over my worktop, here was me. Sacred heart of God, where did you get them? You know? Do you want a wee sweetie? He says, yellows and blue tablets. There was about 500 of them in a package that he ordered on the internet.
Wow. How many have you been?
You tell me that they can't detect those coming through a post.
Yeah. You've been through so much, Pamela. Where do you get your strength?
I don't know. I don't know, Greg. I really don't. And there was a thing on YouTube was put up. A fella did. He did it as he thought in good sense for the people, which wasn't, because what I didn't know that he had been to Stephen's house and did this video of Stephen, and if you'd have seen the dirt of the house, all lying round the floor and all over, you would have thought Stephen was somebody that wasn't cared for and didn't look after himself, and we went up there more times than enough and found him nearly dead. And
you
know, and I would red up the house and try my best to do what you could with what I, and we bought him more stuff and enough. And do you know what it all started with, Greg? I'm telling you this true now. Stephen started out with a lovely wee girl who took sick and she was taken to the Royal. And he went and he spent his time with him and the mammy to the Royal, spent the time with the wee girl. And one of the days they were told, "Take her home and let her die in peace. We can't do any more for her." And Stephen brought her home and he went through the internet and he found Dr. Hans Grettinger in Tübingen in Germany. And he explained the whole situation and he had to send on all the medical records then. And Dr. Hans Grettinger says yes, that she was a good candidate for him because she was only a baby. And Stephen and his partner went in an aeroplane to Tübingen in Germany, spent their time with her, and Stephen's stem cells saved her. And it was through all the goodness of the people in Donegal and Derry and afar that paid in a fund to pay for that. But then during the time that he was there, they were smoking this dope, and then the dope went from that to something else then with Stephen.
What a remarkable
story. Got greater and greater.
All right.
But he cared for that wee girl, and she'll be 18 now next week.
Lovely. Okay. Pamela, again, sorry for everything you've gone through, and thanks for helping us understand. I really appreciate it, and it's
no
clear
problem,
that you...
But there's just nowhere for them, Greg, and yeah. It's time that these people that are running around doors asking for your vote, let them get up and see where it's all coming from, and let them provide a place
okay.
that they can go to. And I know they have to be willing to go as well. They have to say, yes, I want to go. But whenever the place is away in Newry or somewhere to get, there's no way that they're going to go to Newry.
Okay.
You know?
I get you, Pamela. It's too far away. Thank you very much for your time and condolences to you again. We're also still in the company of Martin McFadden, addiction counsellor, but I just want to bring Sheila into the conversation. Sheila, good morning to you. Sheila, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can, yeah.
Okay. What's your situation at the moment, Sheila?
Well, my daughter has been drinking a lot. Weekly, you know, at night she would go down the town and get some drink and come back very drunk to the house, and then I could take no more, so I went to the GP and they referred us to addiction counselling, and she's at that now. I don't know if it's like it helps her, but she tries to tell me now that she doesn't take any drink, but I think that she's actually turned to taking some, you know, weed and I don't know what else, you know.
Yeah, but you have your suspicions, but you don't know. You think she's switched alcohol out for cannabis or cocaine. Well, Martin's with us here now. Martin, I mean, obviously, that's a tough one, and you can, you know, I know Sheila's doing everything she can to keep her daughter safe. It's tough, but how can she ascertain that, or what would your advice be to Sheila?
Yeah, well, I mean, firstly, is to be and remain, Sheila, as supportive as you possibly can. It's a difficult situation to watch somebody you love, you know, fall down that that spiral or that hole of addiction. And quite often people... Quite often people will leave down one drug and pick up another, and that's a fairly regular occurrence, you know. And usually they end up back with their drug of choice anyway. It's just to continue to be supportive and you know, if she is attending addiction counselling, that's a good thing. It's very difficult. Like, a lot of work I would do would be around trauma and addiction, and most people who find their way to an addiction service or find themselves in the position your daughter's in, there's usually something behind that, and what they're doing to use drink or drugs or whatever, it's to numb the pain.
And will the addiction counsellor, will the addiction services be able to tease that out with Sheila's daughter?
Well, again, you see, I suppose, Greg, it's the limited resources that are out there, you know, and I follow your show regularly, and you're a great advocate for lots of different things, even this morning, diabetes, cancer care. And, you know, when you consider that the services are not in place for those particular issues, you know, I mean, alcoholics and addicts traditionally have been well down the pecking order in terms of supports because it's considered by some people as still a choice behaviour.
Yeah.
And for anyone who knows anything about addiction, it's not just that simple. It's a whole lot more complex than that. And just listening to the lady before as well, and I sympathise with her on her losses. You know, there aren't a lot of supports out there. It's very, very difficult, and it's becoming even more difficult now because of the number of people who are cross addicted.
Yeah, and Sheila, from your perspective, obviously this is your baby, and you know you want to do everything you can to protect her. Are you getting enough support to help her through her addiction at this point?
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
And
she's getting a lot of counselling.
Is it possible that you're overly worried that maybe she's on trying drugs as well because you're so worried about her?
Yeah, no, I do know she will admit to it, you know, but I just don't know how much or is it cocaine or, you know, is it just weed or, you know,
I
know she does tell me, like, you know, what she takes.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, it's a pity that there isn't more sort of support for family members out there in terms of even, you know, education around it and what to look out for and how to manage that. You know, there's definitely not enough of that available either, I don't think.
Well, Sheila, obviously you're a fantastic mum doing your absolute best, and we hope that these services work for your beautiful daughter.
Best of luck.
Yeah.
if we can offer anything else, not on air or off air, get back in touch with us in case we can do anything to put you in contact with others. I don't want you to feel alone, because I presume it feels very lonely at times, even when you've got people around you. So if there's anything we can do or whatever, I don't know what it might be at this time. I just don't want you to feel that when you get off this phone call that that's the end of it. You know, we can try and help if need be somewhere else down the line, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay,
thank
just
you.
So you don't feel as lonely as it can feel. Thanks, Sheila, who's obviously a great...
absolutely,
Stay with us. You're okay for another little while.
Okay,
we're going to take a quick break. I do have to catch up on these. Back in a sec. We're in the company of Martin McFadden, Addiction Counsellor. We're just trying to have an open, frank conversation here about drugs usage. If you want to get involved in the conversation, 07491 25000, give us a call, or 086 60 25000. And I'm genuine in saying this, Martin, I get very frustrated and upset, actually. And you know, you add the 14 billion of the Apple money, if we didn't contest that, and I understand the reasons, we are on top of the 34 billion odd surplus this year, and next, not to mention the 8 billion from last year. So you're up around 52, 3 billion euro in a population of 5 million.
Yeah.
I can't understand whilst... Now, in fairness to Sheila, she seems to be getting the supports, but there's families out there who can't get even a counselling session for their young people because they're at the pin of their collar financially and they can't afford it privately or be affordably. And publicly, there's not much available. I cannot square the circle of this, all of this money, and us letting us young people, letting our young people and families down, like we seem to be doing. It's beyond you and I, right? But I just cannot make sense of it, that we could. I mean, we're Manchester, right? Okay, we've got 45 billion to sort Manchester out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why aren't we? Why are our young people, why are we losing them to drugs? Why are we, you know, when I say losing, I mean actually losing them. I don't mean losing them in the sense that their personalities change, Martin. But
I mean, I suppose firstly, it's important for me to say there are a lot of good people working within the services who are absolutely stretched to their to the pin of their collar and burnt out and everything that comes with that. And good, really good, compassionate, caring people, and they, like us, would be extremely frustrated, I'm sure. I mean, look, I mean, I've been kind of at the coalface of this for quite a number of years, and I suppose if you're asking me honestly, I the stuff you're talking about, why is it happening? I mean, like, I have come to the conclusion that it's happening by design. It's happening by choice, because why else would it happen? You know. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not rocket science. You know, people who have been kind of had their eyes open for the last number of years anyway would have seen what's happening and what's coming down the track in terms of drugs. And little or nothing has been done to try and avert or put anything into place to try and protect our young people. Mm. You know, the education, the early intervention, all of that stuff hasn't been there. And, you know, I think part of it is coming from that moralistic model of, well, you know, if you take a drug or a drink, then that's your responsibility. And if you fall across the line into active addiction, then that's your problem to get back from.
Yeah, because, you know, and I get it. I have a sense of humor. You know what? I don't mind. You know what I mean? And I get jokes, and sometimes my humor can be dark, right?
Mm.
But you will see a significant haul of cocaine or cannabis, and it'll be posted on a Facebook page, and people will joke about it. They'll say, you know, I've liked and shared. In other words, they want to win it. And what I get that, and it's a humor, right? That's fine. I've no harm. There's no harm in
no
it.
Harm
to
in
say,
that.
I've got a bit of dark humor as well. But then again, on the flip side, then you'll get someone who's convicted for drug use or whatever, and they're scumbags and all the kind of words that Pamela used. So societally, right? I don't. We either make a joke of it or something, or else we just condemn people.
Yeah.
That, in other words, it is only their choice, that they made decisions, that they took a certain path. So, you know what I mean? I don't think us as a population are actually really in the conversation. I think
I think it's uncomfortable.
Well, take it really light, or else we condemn people.
I think what you're saying for me kind of it shows a kind of an uncomfortableness around it, and probably a lack of understanding. So we don't really know how to handle it. You know, we know it's somewhere along the line it's potentially harmful and dangerous, but yet we do have that gallows humour around it. But you know, that, like, I mean, you were talking to me, you know, a few minutes ago about the health-led approach, and I think that's part of it as well, the fact that, you know...
Well, can I, before that, let's frame that, if you right. don't mind, because I yeah. don't want to interrupt your flow of thoughts. You're effectively saying, and you have said, that cocaine and certain other drugs are absolutely everywhere now.
Everywhere, yeah.
It's such a part of society, it would be like, you know, to try and discourage its use with the level of policing yeah. we have or with education, we don't stop it, right? So when you talk about a healthcare-led approach, that means decriminalisation, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So talk to me about what you would see as how we deal, and we'll focus on cocaine and cannabis, yeah?
Yeah, fine,
so
yeah.
How do we deal with the scourge of those two drugs in our society?
Well, again, you know, I would always have been an advocate for decriminalisation in terms of, again, because I suppose from a personal and professional perspective, I would value people's autonomy and their right to choose. I suppose the caveat with that is people, and particularly probably young people who are still have a developing brain, don't always make or have the information to hand to make informed choices. So, you know, the impulsivity and everything that comes with youth, there are no disclaimers handed out by drug dealers as to what can potentially happen. So, you know, that kind of education is not there. So, for people who make poor choices, and they are poor choices, they should not be criminalised for that. So if you go out the weekend and you're in Dom's or wherever you are, the McCafferty's, whatever, and you're doing a line of coke, you should not be criminalised for that.
Well, then what discourages me from doing it?
Well, I mean, the threat at this stage, the threat of being arrested and maybe getting a fine or whatever else, that has no bearing anymore for people, because people don't respect that anymore. There's no fear in that. I mean, like, you walk into a pub now and it's easier to pick out the people who are not doing cocaine as opposed to the people who are. So that's not a deterrent. The legal aspect is not a deterrent anymore. One thing I would have always kind of thought, though, from my own perspective, the actual legalisation is something I would struggle a little bit with, for a couple of reasons, because of the message that it would send out. That, and you just touched on it there a few minutes ago, drugs were bad, and all of a sudden if you legalise them, then does that make them good? Do you know what I mean?
So
that,
so what does decriminalising then, so in other words, if I'm doing a line of coke in a pub and there's an undercover guard, if they actually do that anymore, if they're resourced to do it, do I don't get a fine or charge, do I get referred to a drugs awareness program?
That's what they do in places like Portugal, and that's the model that's always held up, if you like. It's not perfect, you know, but I suppose where I'm at now, I don't think it really makes any difference whether you legalise or you don't, because I think we've gone that far
down
the
track. But is it
not?
Have we, though, right? And this is, I'm not, like, you know, I don't know anyone that takes cocaine.
Okay.
Right? I don't believe I do. Okay.
Okay. I'll tell you, you do.
Do I? Right. Okay. Well, then I'll leave it at that then. So,
either that or you don't get out.
Okay. Yes. All right. Okay. It's that. That's how bad it is.
I'm afraid so. Yeah.
And it's across all society.
Across all sectors, you know. And I made the point to, you know, it's your local postman, your local politician, your
not
local
mine,
priest.
By the way,
you know,
I could
no, but that's where it's at. Like,
yeah,
and even the figures, like, in terms of, you know, I was listening to Dr. Colin O'Gara there in St. John of God's and reading some of his stuff. There's a cohort of farmers now have been really, really badly affected by cocaine, and they're presenting for treatment. You know, young women from the ages of 15 to 24, there's been a sixfold increase
you
there.
See, also to what you we know. Don't, I don't know how we gauge how bad something is, but I don't believe also, and it's, you could say the same of suicide, for an example, and there is efforts ongoing at the moment with the with coroners to try and get some figures on it, because how can you address something properly or targeted approach unless you truly know the extent of a problem?
Yeah.
And the same with drug use. Okay,
yeah,
we don't know the impacts on the mental health services from people taking drugs, and I'm going to include alcohol in that. In terms of suicides, for that matter, we don't know how definitively. How big a factor is drinking drugs? I mean, what really opened my eyes is once the Gardaí started to be able to test for drugs.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, like, it was 50-50. Mm-hmm. 50% people on drugs, 50% people on drink. But that gave us some idea of what was going on. I think this country and our government needs to do a full, across-the-board assessment of the use of drugs and what impact they're having on people's lives and death.
Yeah, I mean, I get you. And just right back to the train of thought or what we've been talking about, you know, I believe a lot of the figures that are projected and given to us are very conservative by their nature. And those figures are quite often massaged. And they're massaged to suit the narrative. Because, Greg, if you were to truly know the extent of the drug problem in numbers or suicide or any of those issues, then, you know, we would be forced to sit up and take notice. And then if we have to sit up and take notice, then we have to do something about it.
Like road traffic collisions.
Absolutely. So that's what I'm saying. This often, for me, looks as if it's done by design.
Right, and talk me through the health-led approach then.
Well, the health-led approach, again, it's probably, you know, in terms of cost as well, it would involve, you know, more educational programs that, you know, were not industry-led as we've had in the past in terms of, you know, alcohol or any other addictions. But also, you know, people in place who are able to work with trauma. So it's like somebody comes to me, I don't say, Greg, what's wrong with you? I say, what happened to you? Mm. But when I ask you what happened to you, then I have to sit down and work with you and listen to you and work through that. Where, you know,
that's resources heavy. Then.
That's resources. And again, not to put any sort of blame on the medical profession either, but it's so much easier and has been to write a script and off you go, you know, and medicate yourself.
We are seeing record levels of certain prescription drugs.
Absolutely.
Where counselling could be an alternative.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, again, you know, in terms of, you know, there is a time and a place.
That in itself causes its own addictions as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, medication works with talk and therapy, and that you know, if you're doing. But and you see the problem for a lot of people in addiction, Greg, and I think maybe people miss this, is the fact that if you're coming to an addiction service or counsellor or whatever it is, you're coming obviously with a bit of baggage and a history. And, you know, I don't tell people now who come to me, you have to stop drinking or you have to stop using. Because if I do that, I'm taking away their crutch. Mm-hmm. And there's a possibility they'll go out the door and they won't come back again because I've taken away the only friend. So what I say to people, and this is a health-led approach, is, okay, I understand that you may need to have a drink at the weekend, but let's try and work on the stuff that caused you to drink in the first place. Mm-hmm. And if we can resolve that or get some sort of understanding and maybe clarity around that,
or even keep the conversation going,
then there's a good chance you may not need to drink as much, if at all.
I mean, you know, they celebrated, government celebrated a record announcement for mental health, 78 million for 2023. Now, 78 million in a population of 5 million to me seems like chicken feed. That should be a billion. But it should only be a billion if we look at the structures and how everything's set up.
Yeah.
There's no point throwing money at the problem either. But personally, I would not be celebrating 78 million on mental health service because a lot of that is wages, a lot of that's admin, a lot of that is paying rent on buildings and all that kind of stuff. It's actually chicken feed, you know, or chicken poo for that matter. Do you know what I mean? That figure, if we're serious about saving our young people, and not just young people, because addiction, there's many older people are addicted as well, that figure should be 500 million.
Yeah,
look at the amount of money we're talking about, but it can't be thrown into a black hole of administration.
100%.
It needs to all be stripped back and put money at it. And let's become a world leader. You know, I'm hearing Stephen Donald talking about, we're going to be a world leader in putting labels on bottles of alcohol, right? And you know, like, I'm like, seriously, presenter, are you going to challenge this person? Seriously, let's become a world leader on freaking dealing with people who have problems, helping them.
Yeah.
Then we can be proud.
But the labels are easier. It's easier to do that.
Well, it's effectively a sticky plaster. You know, almost literally, that's what it is.
Yeah,
all right, Martin, listen, is there anything you want to add? I mean, keep up the work that you're doing. Yeah. I think it's an eye-opener. I don't think there's any exaggeration in anything that we've talked about.
I mean, it's a difficult subject, difficult topic. And I mean, again, I get very frustrated and like yourself and angry and I have to kind of, you know, but I mean, I suppose one of the, just to finish on maybe the fact that, and it's quite a stark statistic, and I think it really should alarm anybody. You know, the fact that we are the fourth highest consumers of cocaine in the world right now, behind only Australia, Spain and the Netherlands. You know, that to me is just, you know, it's mind-boggling, you know, that it's gotten this far, you know. A lot of countries in the world, you know.
Okay, listen, thanks for all of your time. I appreciate it, Mark.
You're welcome.
I know you were up since just after 10, but with the other things that we had to do, I didn't want to rush it in a couple of minutes, so I appreciate you hanging about.
No, thank you, Greg.
It's an important conversation. And, you know, maybe we also need to make sure we're talking to our younger people as well, because we have to talk to them presuming that they know where to get cocaine.
Yeah.
One of their friends is taking cocaine, they've taken cocaine, or they're hanging around with people taking cocaine. And we have to presume that that's it then, because, I mean, you laughed me out of it when I said I didn't know anyone that takes cocaine. So do you know what I mean? It is at that point.
We definitely need a more compassionate approach anyway, and a more understanding, I think, you know. Whether that happens or not, I don't know.
Okay, McFadden, addiction counsellor, thanks for your time.
Thanks.
Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. We're joined on it now by Len Porter, author and journalist in Portugal. Len, thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning.
Right, for those who aren't aware, police investigating the disappearance of Madeleine McCann will begin or have begun a search of a reservoir in Portugal today. How significant is this development in this case, Len, do you think?
Well, it's very difficult at this stage to say. The reservoir has been searched before, but it's another search is underway today. And this reservoir in question is near the town or the city of Sils, which is about half an hour away from Praia da Luz, where Madeleine disappeared from in 2007. Bruckner, this terrible paedophile, is said to have frequented the area, and so that's what's called for the search today.
Now, previously, my understanding is this area was searched and it was funded privately. Presumably, this is intelligence led by the German police, who are obviously taking this very seriously. And in that, you would hope that they have the best of equipment and people to thoroughly either confirm or otherwise that this could be the final resting place of Madeleine McCann, or her current resting place, let me put it like that.
Well, the search is being coordinated by the Portuguese police. It has been instigated, as you say, by the German police, and there will be a presence by British police, the Metropolitan Police. The searching is going on in the water and in the woodland next to the reservoir, as far as I know. And there have been lots of digs for Madeleine since her disappearance. The last big dig by the Metropolitan Police was near Praia da Luz in 2014. There were many, many searches in 2007. They went on for more than a year. Now, the reservoir was searched in late 2007 and in 2008. Now, that first search was initiated, as I understand, on behalf of Kate and Jerry McCann. It was initiated by the multimillionaire Brian Kennedy, a friend of the McCanns. The search was done by a Spanish group of private detectives, but doubts remain about the honesty of that early 2008 searching. A distraction from the truth is what some people say. Is Bruckner, Christian Bruckner, this German paedophile, being made a scapegoat?
And there does seem to be a circumstantial case against him, though, nonetheless, does there not, in that his mobile phone records show him in the vicinity of the area where Madeleine disappeared from. He was known to be in and around this reservoir. It depends on, I suppose, which coverage you read of it. It would seem to be a slam dunk. You're suggesting otherwise.
Well, there is circumstantial evidence. There's lots of circumstantial evidence on this case, but there's virtually no solid evidence. There's virtually no solid evidence as to what happened to Madeleine since 2007. Now, the German prosecutor has said about Bruckner that he has said that he was 100% sure that Bruckner was involved, but he hasn't produced, or certainly not publicly produced, any solid evidence to support this. And as I say, 16 years on, there's lots of speculation, lots of contradictions, and lots of confusion, but very little solid evidence. And that's what's needed in this case.
And finally, is there any confidence at all, Len, amongst you or others very familiar with this case, that these latest searches might produce any answers?
Well, I think we all hope so. And at this stage, that's the best we can do. We can just hope that the search over the next couple of days does produce an answer.
Len, thank you very much for your time this morning. I appreciate it. That is Len Porter, who's an author and journalist in Portugal. As we mentioned there, divers will look at an area around 30 miles away from where the toddler went missing in the Algarve in 2007. The suspect, Christian B, is known to have camped in the area. Officers have already done a search of the dam, but found nothing. So not only will Madeleine's parents be watching on very closely as to what happens, but the eyes of the world, I think it's just one of those cases that a lot of people feel very invested in, will be watching on as well. Okay, let us get to some of your comments as we head towards the end of the programme for this Tuesday. Drug dealers getting off too light in the courts. Fines and sentences don't match the destruction these evil people cause to families. Yeah, maybe at the low level, but I mean at the highest level, there's an awful lot of people involved in the drug industry that have been sentenced and they will never see the light of day again. But I do take your point. I suppose if you're involved in any activity at all and you fear you might be caught for doing such illegal activity and it's very, very lucrative, you would have to feel that the sentence was such that it wouldn't be worth your while. Maybe that's just simply not the case at the moment. A caller wants to know or asks how many people with undiagnosed ADHD have addiction problems. I don't know, really, or enough about that to comment. Do we have time for this email? Okay, I'll try it here. I just want to highlight something that I'm sure has been discussed, but until it comes knocking at your door, unfortunately, we, like most people, had no awareness of. I've been recently diagnosed with breast cancer and have had to briefly, is the plan, and reluctantly leave my work as a preschool manager whilst undergoing treatment. As I'm only at the start of my journey, I'm unsure how long I'll be at home. So I contacted Citizens Advice to see how I'm going to manage my rent, bills and outgoings. The shock I had to be told I'm entitled to €210 a week. That's it. My rent's €194 a week. I can live happily on beans and toast, but I'm going to need electricity to heat those beans and make toast. Maybe some heat to heat this old bean. Seriously, is this the society we live in? The caller says, luckily, they're entitled to a medical card because they've got cancer. But then they go on to talk about all the other expenses. They've had to take time off work to go through their cancer treatment, and they're entitled to €210 a week, rent alone €194. Have any of you any input or advice in that regard? I'll come back to that and give it a little bit more time a little bit earlier in the show the next time, but just thought I'd throw it out there in case any of you want to consider it throughout the day and text in or call in. Right, that's where we have to leave it on the programme today. Thank you to all of you who listened to the show and those of you who chose to watch the show. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9:00.